Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Good morning and good afternoon, depending on where you are around the country. I often have to stop and think myself as we are on the 13 Moon Walk for Peace, currently in Austin, Texas. Today I am so excited about our program. I have an opportunity to share this hour with Andrew Harvey. For those of you who may not know Andrew, let's take a moment. Andrew Harvey is an internationally acclaimed poet, novelist, translator, mystical scholar, and spiritual teacher. He has published over 20 books, including his current book, The Hope, A Guide to Sacred Activism and Heart Yoga, The Sacred Marriage of Yoga and Mysticism. And Harvey is a fellow of All Souls College in so many different urban and suburban areas. We have found that the real gold on this journey is community and what happens in community and how we can work together to ignite in each of us the opportunity to act out our passion, or as I say, live into our passion and our call for change, not only in our country, but the seeds of change that are indeed transforming the world. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Andrew. How are you this morning?
Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
All right, I bet you are. That's the Andrew I know.
I'm trying. Where are you, sweetheart?
We are in Austin, Texas.
Oh, and Austin is... I've been told that Austin is the place where everybody's moving to at the moment.
Oh,
are you loving it there?
Oh, we are loving it here. It has really been truly a musical treat, as well as just the energy of the young people here. I'm loving it, you know. They're very engaged.
Oh, my God, engaged. This is the point.
Isn't it really?
Yeah.
Well, and I have to tell you, I have been enjoying reading through as many of your books and watching your videos. I can't get enough.
Please say that, Donnie.
I mean it. I think that you twist my mind in all these different ways and make me really have an opportunity to evaluate what am I doing and how can I do it better.
Oh, thank you. We all need to get into shape now, don't we?
Oh, we certainly do. This is truly the time of calling. Andrew, talk about one of the things that comes through in both your writing and your presentations that I've had an opportunity to look at is this connection between the mystic in all of us and the call to action in all of us, and how we not only balance those two but bring those to together like two symbols, I suppose, and watching what comes forward, or actually acting, living into what comes out of that union. Can you speak to that?
Yes, I'd love to. I think the most important thing is to understand the nature of the divine, and that the nature of the divine is both deeply peaceful, eternally peaceful, and radically dynamically active. And that you could say that in the Hindu tradition, for example, expresses this as the marriage of Shiva and Shakti, as the marriage of the peace and radiance of the diamond with the fiery light that the diamond gives that creates everything. So I think what I am calling for in my book, The Hope, A Guide to Sacred Activism, which really is the roadmap, as far as I can understand it, for this fusion of radical mystical knowledge and passion and peace with clear, wise, focused action in the world. The clue to realizing this is to understand that God is both the great peace and the great passion, and that we are called as children of God to unite the two. When I was really trying to formulate my vision of sacred activism, there were two major initiations that happened to me that gave me the real insight. The first was that when my father was dying, in the place where I was born, which was in South India, I had a vision of the Christ in church. And what happened was is that the statue statue of the Christ came alive, and this huge force of divine passion in the form of fire came from the statue, ripped open my heart, awoke a volcano of divine love in my own heart, and my fire and the fire of the Christ and the fire of love itself became one immense experience, one immense passion aflame. And I went out into the Indian noon and saw an armless and legless young man, and I saw in his eyes the same Christ that I'd seen blazing in glory in the church. And I heard this tremendously loud and ferocious voice saying, "You have been playing with the light. You have used it to decorate your ego and to go off into an addiction to transcendence. Don't you realize the world is burning to death? Animals are being destroyed. The habitat of the world is being destroyed. The environment is being destroyed. We're creating a death machine of injustice and craziness and cruelty and madness. And you've had the mystical experiences you've had, not to go off into some private ecstasy, but to use the power and the fuel of those experiences to make yourself strong enough and vibrant enough and critical enough and clear enough and wise enough and passionate enough to start turning up in the world to do my work of justice and compassion." That was a huge wake-up call to me, as you can imagine. And about a year later, I had a dream, which really is the foundation. It was a vision, really. And in this vision, I saw two rivers of fire racing towards the horizon. And when they met at the horizon, they exploded together in a vast nuclear explosion that wasn't a destructive explosion, but a birth of a new, wild, gorgeous, all-transforming force. And as I saw this, witnessed this, I heard, "These two rivers are the two most powerful forces in the human soul, the fiery force of the mystic's passion for God and the fiery force of the activist's passion for justice. And when these two passions come together, these two fires meet, a third fire is created, and this third fire is the fire of love and wisdom in action. And with this fire, all things can be made new. Chaos can become order. Apocalypse can become grace. Devastation can be healed. And the paralysis and the greed and the narcissism of the human race in its current terrifying manifestation can be transformed into a humble alignment with the will of God to transform all existing institutions, all ways of being and doing everything, to create the kingdom on earth, the kingdom, queendom on earth." So that was a revelation.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a huge, huge revelation. And it's from that revelation that I've created the term sacred activism, which really describes this fusion of the passion of the mystic for God with the passion of the activist for justice. You see, what has happened, I think, is that mystics have tended to become subtle narcissists and become addicted to transcendence, addicted to a vision of the divine as light, and that they've been tempted to drop the world, drop the issues of justice, drop relationships, and go off into the ecstatic. This is a dangerous form of narcissism, especially since it has such deep rewards. You do feel great, but what is the point of just feeling great if the world is burning to death and the world is entirely and absolutely holy and sacred in every particular? The same kind of subtle narcissism has pervaded activism, because activists, while very deeply motivated by noble impulses of justice, have tended to forget that their deepest source is in their own divine identity, and so have become addicted to blame and addicted to anger and addicted to despair and burnout. So you see that the two most sensitive groups of people have been, in a way, collared and restrained by a subtle narcissism which can only be healed by incorporating the best of the other. So when the mystic really wakes up to the sacredness of the world, the sacredness of the animals, the sacredness of the environment, the sacredness of every human being and every sentient being, and the enormous danger that we are in, and the necessity to put love into action, the healing of the narcissism of the mystics takes place. And when the activist wakes up to the holiness of everything, the holiness of the essential enterprise of justice, the holiness of every being, the deep sacred identity of every being, then the whole enterprise of activism becomes grounded in a very much deeper spiritual power, which actually helps the activist look after himself or herself, helps the activist not burn out, gives the activist the courage and the patience to go on loving and acting from the deepest possible place and not become defeated and discouraged and disappointed and devastated by the inevitable difficulties of action. So when the mystic's passion for God and the activist's passion for justice come together in a human being, what happens is that this elemental primordial fire, this third fire, is activated in that person, and they become secret agents, if you like, of the evolutionary will of the divine to transform this chaotic planet into a place where divine law, divine harmony, divine love reign and enable us to transform this apocalyptic situation we're in into a massive opportunity for a wholly new way of being and doing everything.
So, Andrew, as you talk about this age that we're in relationship to the two fires coming
through
the third, is it your sense that we will go through the great shaking and that the coming together of the mystic and the activist will lead us out of it?
Yes. I think... To tell you the absolute truth, and I think, why are we speaking unless we can speak very nakedly to each other?
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, and I think this is true of many other of the radical teachers on the planet, we believed that we could in some way prevent what is about to unfold and what's already unfolding, and that gave us great urgency and great passion and sometimes great rage. Now I think we are all aware that the world is in terrible shape. The corporations and the governments and the media are in absolute denial of what's truly going on, and the shattering, the great shattering, the collapse of all of our human agendas and fantasies and of our current way of living is now certain. This is, when you first face it, absolutely terrifying, because of course this collapse is going to be very, very dark, very difficult, very painful, very dangerous. But when you step back and really try and understand this collapse from a divine perspective, you see that it is actually what the mystics call the dark night. It is not a punishment, it is not a devastation that's going to lead to extinction. It is a process very severe and very terrible through which human egotism, human narcissism, human fantasy of control, human fantasy of exploitation and domination of nature, all of these are going to be systematically and ruthlessly destroyed, not to destroy the human race, but to give it an extraordinary opportunity to humble itself, align itself with the divine will, and start working together beyond dogma, beyond racial and tribal separations, to create a unified humanity dedicated to putting the divine love and the divine will and the divine intelligence into radical action on every level of the world. So what I see is that we're going to go through a great evolutionary crisis. We are in it already. This crisis is best seen, I think, as a dark night. And the dark night in the mystical traditions is known as this terrible ordeal through which the full self is unraveled, not as a punishment, but as an opportunity to enter into the much more spacious, much more loving, much more compassionate divine self. And this is going to happen. It's going to be very difficult, but it is going to happen. So those of us who see that the shattering is inevitable, who see that this is a mystery of transformation, are now preparing ourselves and as many people as want to be prepared to put in place the structures that can shepherd humanity through this ordeal.
Well, as you talk about the structures, there was one thing I wanted to bring into the conversation first, and then I want to go back to talking about possible structures. You talk a lot in your book about the shadow work.
Yes.
How does that relate to this physical process of our time, not only on a personal level, but on a global level, if you will?
Well, I think that one of the dangers of the New Age, and one of the many dangers of the New Age, has been its relentless and narcissistic concentration on the divine as light itself. So there is this prevailing notion in the New Age, which is extremely dangerous, that if you talk about environmental destruction, if you talk about the horror of 2 billion people living in poverty, if you talk about the devastating way in which we're treating the animals, if you talk about the really horrific domination of the corporations and their bottom line mentality of everything that we do, if you talk about the paralysis that's pervading human society at the moment, you are in some way creating it, which is absurd. You've got to be able to analyze and face the radical illness that is threatening us at this moment and threatening the whole planet. So shadow work is essential for the sacred activist. And there are two kinds of shadow that need to be faced as deeply as possible from a sacredly profound a place as possible. The first is the collective shadow. We have to realize that we have created a death machine in our pathological belief in unlimited growth, in our pathological understanding of the human self as having absolute rights over animals, over nature, over the exploitation of animals and nature, and in our addiction to comfort and to a lifestyle which is ruining the earth. And we also have to face the ways in which our own private shadow collude with this collective shadow. So what I've done in my book is to really lay out what I believe the collective shadow is making us all feel at a sacred and deep level, which is very painful but has to be faced. I think that there are five aspects of this collective shadow which every sacred activist will meet. And whenever I've talked about this, and I've talked about this all over the world, there is deep recognition of the truth of this. I think the five aspects of the collective shadow are denial that anything terrible is going on while it's ravaging the earth. Disbelief, because we just can't believe that we are as destructive in our current consciousness as we are, and so constantly reel from that. Deep disillusion at human nature, because at this moment, after the 20th century, in which hundreds of millions of people died in war, in genocide, and in which we allowed an environmental catastrophe to flower while we all made hay with a consumerist culture, deep dread, because as soon as you start to face all of this, you feel, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, what's coming down? What are we going to have to go through? And then perhaps most tellingly of all, a great death wish, because when I really speak to sacred activists, people who are turning up in the world as it really is and who are facing all of these things, it is overwhelming. And people often say to me, I just wish I wasn't here. Part of me wants to die. I want to get out of this horrific situation. I just don't think the human race is able to cope with it. The violence ahead is so terrible. The pain ahead is so terrible. What I've discovered is that when you do really deep sacred practice, when you ground yourself in God, then you can create a container large enough to make all of these five aspects of the collective shadow conscious in you, and you won't be overwhelmed and destroyed by them. You'll become just more deeply and calmly, urgently committed to doing the work of the transformation, because you see just what is at stake if it isn't done. Then, once you face the five collective shadows, you really do need to look, and we all need to look, at the ways in which our private shadows collaborate with this death machine. And I think we're all addicted to comfort. We've all been spoiled and coddled by the consumerist culture and this culture of unlimited growth. we're all terrified of really standing up to it because we all know how ruthless it can be to people who stand up to it. We're all wounded from our childhoods and from the sufferings that we've been through, and we can use those wounds to hide behind and to feel impotent from. And we all are victims, I think, of what I call the golden shadow, which is that we all, and I know this in myself, project onto people like the Dalai Lama or Teresa, Mother Teresa, a kind of glowing specialness, which we feel we don't have. So we worship them for what they do without claiming what they do as signs to us of what we can do. The Dalai Lama is always saying to me, he says, I'm just an ordinary person. I've turned up. I do what I do. I do the sacred practices. And people keep saying, oh, you're so special. I'm not special. I am you. I am somebody who is authentic. Mother Teresa was always saying that. She said, I'm just an ordinary Albanian woman who follows the course of love. Desmond Tutu said to me, he said, you know, I was in the Reconciliation Commission. I started it in South Africa. And I saw hundreds and hundreds of quite ordinary people rise to the most incredible heights of forgiveness. And then I saw people saying, oh, these people are saints. And they, in a way, are saints. But what we have to face is that we all have this power of sanctity within us by becoming real, by fusing the two fires together, and that this golden shadow that we indulge in of projecting our own divinity onto others is actually something that keeps us subtly imprisoned. So really to come into your full power as a divine human being, as a sacred activist, you need to do and to continue to do massive shadow work on all the things that keep you embracing limitation, embracing despair, embracing comfort, embracing the current way of doing things, and to really offer them up for transformation. This is very difficult work, but it can be done, and it must be done by everybody, and it must be done by us together. But one of the great advantages, there are really two great advantages, I think, of doing this work. The first is that the old way of blaming and projecting your own stuff onto others ends. You really do have to face that it's not just the CEOs and the politicians and the heads of corporations and the heads of media who are consumed by greed and narcissism and who are living lives of great carelessness. We all are to a certain extent, and we all are colluding. And that means that sacred activism stops the kind of blaming that goes on, because we all realize that we're part of this huge problem, so we all have to do the work together. And the second thing that happens from this kind of shadow work is that because you've been brave enough to identify the greed and the narcissism and the cowardice and the denial and the disbelief and the death wish in yourself, then you become very much more compassionate and very much more skillful in dealing with it in other people and in helping other people to begin to face it and deal with it themselves. And so the birth of very profound, skillful means is made possible by this embrace of the shadow. This is essential work now. And in the curriculum that I'm now creating for sacred activism, which is going to be a massive curriculum, it's going to be a 300-page book, but it's not just a book, it's going to be a whole curriculum. Shadow work has a very essential place, because until you do this work, you're in la-la land. And we cannot afford to be in la-la land at this moment, because any illusion about ourselves is dangerous now. And the wonderful thing that you do discover, of course, when you do this profound shadow work, and you go through many zones of despair and paralysis and sadness at humanity and at yourself and deep guilt, etc., the extraordinary thing that you discover is, of course, that the divine has always known this about you. You're not telling God anything God doesn't know. And that God has already forgiven us for this kind of crazy weakness and narcissism. We have been forgiven. We are forgiven. God is mercy. And that when you make conscious this inner darkness and offer it up to the beloved for transformation, you are flooded by great love and great joy and great power and a great sense that you are not limited to this, but that you can, aware of this, go forward with a much deeper sense of purpose and a much more skillful humility.
Yes, and I think we go forward also at the root of that is also courage.
Yes,
Yeah, in this walk, so often within ourselves, within the communities that we walk through, because when you're walking, you're engaging community in a totally different way.
Oh, yes.
And when we're talking with communities, the feeling of disempowerment and hopelessness is often where we start, you know, in terms of dialogue. And we're not coming to teach or preach or do any of that. We're just coming to listen. You know,
how does it work? Can you explain to me how do you experience this?
Yes, well, when we show up, and the first thing is to show up just as ourselves. We're here, and what do you want us to do? So we figure we walk, and what happens when we move into community, the form of it is really up to the community.
Yes.
And the most rewarding thing, that feedback that we've gotten from communities, you've shown up and you want to hear us. You want us to tell you what we want. Most people come and they already have something they want us to fit into. And so I find, as a result of that, communities quickly, because, you know, we're only there a few days, but they quickly get into a very deep space of letting go. And then through this process of letting go, And often it can be tearful in some of our community groups and sessions that we've had.
It must be tearful, mustn't it? Because I think one of the things that we do as spiritual friends and helpers and guides and teachers is to really give permission to people to feel the great grief they feel.
That's it. That's it. And to feel it and to express it.
Yes.
And, you know, in the expressing of it, what happens is exactly what you were explaining. Right after that process, and sometimes it might take a couple of days, I mean, you know, at the level that we can affect it, but it's often just lifting that energy enough that then you begin to hear the dialogues about, wow, well, we do have the power to shift this. We have to figure out how we come together now and make this happen.
Exactly, but it's so important to go through the heartbreak, isn't it? And I think that we live in a culture in which heartbreak and pain and suffering and deeply, deeply opening to the grief we feel are demonized, are dismissed as non-divine or even more as ignorant. They're not ignorant, they're the keys to connecting with the divine heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And as people are crying, you often hear, I'm so sorry, you know, these tears are coming. I'm like, don't be sorry. That's
my God, they are the thawing of the iceberg of the false heart.
Exactly, exactly. But I do have a question, Andrew, because as we do this and as we open this process and we can literally see the difference in communities, and of course they touch us, you know, that just goes to be said.
Oh, yes, but it's a reciprocal process always, isn't it?
Exactly. But the next step for me and what I'm really wanting to get better at is what from your work and your beautiful, beautiful work and contributions, what's the next step in terms of the process? What kinds of things should we be looking at in terms of processes that we can leave or skills or hope? How do we galvanize that energy now into action? And I know one of the ways that I was really attracted to the book was the networks of grace as a possible model.
Oh, thank you.
Well,
I think that there are three main things that all of us who are doing this work of helping preparing the birth in this death need to really get over to people. And I think that we can do this in very simple and very direct ways. The first thing is to really stress to people the necessity of having a daily down-home incessant spiritual practice. You're simply not going to be able to sustain the energy or sustain the level of shadow work or sustain the level of intensity or sustain the level of joy and hope and power and energy that you are going to need to go on going on if you are not grounding in every way, in every day, your whole being in God. And I say in my book that there are four kinds of sacred practice that people need to get down now. Cool practices that keep you calm in everything, and these include the wonderful meditation practices, awareness practices, walking meditations, visualizations that calm you down, saying the name of God in your heart. Hot practices that keep the heart juicy and alive and vibrant, even in the most difficult situations. And I've given these practices in my book and in my curriculum. Heart practices that align yourself with the heart of the divine. Prayer practice that really does, when the cool and hot practices don't work, still keep you aligned. I mean, Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane wasn't sitting in the lotus position. He was weeping tears of blood, but he was praying. And prayer is such an amazing way of keeping alive faith and keeping alive connection to the divine so that you can be guided even in the most extreme and difficult situations by the divine intelligence, by the divine will, by the divine peace. And then body practices. I think very many people don't understand the role of the body in this great transformation. We need to bless the body, to sanctify the body, to look after the body, and to dedicate the body to divine transformation. And that's why I've created this new yoga, Heart Yoga. I wrote the book called Heart Yoga, which came out last year, and it's now getting everywhere in the yoga community. And I've on Daily Om, I put 9 one-hour videos so that people can do Heart Yoga for only $20 now. So if people are excited, go to Daily Om and check it out. And there are so many other forms of sacred dance, of Reiki, of yoga itself that can help people get into their bodies and strengthen their bodies and open up their bodies to divine energy. When you combine these four kinds of practice and shadow work, then you are really, really giving yourself the presence of your own deepest human divinity, and you're getting strong enough to do the work. That's the first thing that is essential to get over to people. The second thing is to really begin, as we go around, to help people in their own localities to start creating community. Because we cannot do this transformation alone. If we try to, we will very, very soon get discouraged and feel isolated and feel helpless. We need to do it with other people. So I think to set up circles in which people can practice together, in which people can mourn together. Joanna Macy's amazing work is very important in this, is absolutely essential so that people can come together to express their grief, to celebrate together, to pray together, to do ritual together. And that these circles can be very simply set up, and they're very effective. The third way is to really say to people, look, now that we've come through and we've awakened with you some real deep sense of where we are and of what needs to be done, all of us need to realize that the reason why the real powerful goodwill that is still present in humanity isn't being more effective on a global level is because we are radically disorganized.
Yes.
The dark seems to be able to organize itself brilliantly. I mean, my God, the terrorist groups are brilliant in their organization, and the Looney Tunes fundamentalist groups are brilliant in their organization. But those of us of more universal goodwill and more universal mystical and activist perspective seem to be absolutely rotten at organization. This has got to change. And that's why I've brought in the vision of networks of grace. It's much more than a vision now, because networks of grace are springing up all over the world. I had a real vision that prompted this creation of networks of grace. I was staying with some amazing nuns. My God, some of the nuns out there are doing wild, gorgeous work. They're so brave, a lot braver than most of the priests, I may say. And these particular nuns are in their 80s, and they're more radical than either you or I. They make me look like Miss Prism. These are women who've been hit on the head by policemen, who fought for every kind of justice all their lives, and I was so inspired by them. And they kept saying, "Oh, go on, Andrew, this is it, get out there, don't hide your message." And I had this dream in which I saw in the sky the words networks of grace, and I'd been studying Al-Qaeda, and I'd been studying fundamentalist groups and their organization, and it suddenly became absolutely clear to me that what all of us of goodwill need now to do is to create in our local communities cells of between 6 to 15 people, not too big, and to create these cells around a heartbreak or a passion or a cause that we feel very deeply about in our local communities, and to start pooling our synergistic energies to do something real about what we feel, to pool our networks, to pool our Rolodex, to pool our enthusiasm, to pool our wisdom, and start really claiming our power as citizens, as lovers of God, in a local way, so that we can really, really start getting this birth through. And the great advantage of living in our time is that we still have a relatively open internet. So if you go to networksofgrace.org, you'll see that there are many, many networks of grace all over the world now, and that they're all connected through the website, and that they can all draw on each other's enthusiasm. So if you start a network of grace, for example, around animals in Boise, Idaho, you can get into contact with people who are doing it in Peru or in Iceland and learn from what they're learning. It's absolutely essential now that this great movement of the heart is grounded and made real. So if you go out and tell people those three things, for God's sake, have your own individual practice and make it very incessant so that you can really get strong. For God's sake, create circles, largish circles in which people can come together to do practice. And for God's sake, ask yourself what breaks your heart the most. Discover your deepest heartbreak, and then discover other people who are motivated by that heartbreak, and create networks of grace that can really, really start working together to do something real in a local community, but linked to the whole world. Now, in those three things, we have, I think, the training for an army of lovers and servants of God to go out there and birth the birth in the real world.
Absolutely. Andrew, we're going to take a short break, and I'm going to come back just with a few questions and provide an opportunity for you to...
Does that make sense to you, what I've just said?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that's essential. I'm out here from a personal standpoint. I'm in exactly everything that you're saying, and I'm not just blindly saying, oh, yeah, clap, clap, Andrew. I'm feeling it in terms of out as we're walking. And often the challenge, the first challenge is getting folks to wake up, you know.
Yes.
And then the second
challenge is to, once they've woken up, once you've awakened them, to give them real tools. Otherwise, the awakening will die, or they'll feel totally alone, and then they'll be discouraged, and then it'll fade out.
Exactly. And you leave them in a worse place.
Yes.
When you arrive.
Right,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, so I'm really connected with that. But what I really want to spend just a moment on it, you know, I'm sorry we only have 1 hour. I could go on with you for,
you know, my God, my darling, I love you. I know the wonderful work you're doing. This is so aligned with everything, yes.
Yeah, but what I really want to spend some time on, Andrew, is getting into this. One of the pieces or aspects of the book that I think was the most profound for me was when you talked about connecting with your deepest heartbreak.
Yes.
And the reason I say this is because often people say to me, well, you know, I hear you saying connect with your passion, but how do I know what that is?
Oh, let's
talk
about that. That is so important.
Exactly. So what I would like to do, let me just take a break because I haven't done any identification and get a cup of tea right quick, and then let's really get into that, because I think I'm kind of being selfish here, Andrew, because I want to have a good answer when the next person asks me that. My typical response is what calls to you, what begs to you, and perhaps has been doing that all your life, but you may be running away from it. But I know that that's not enough. You know?
Well, I have my answer, and I would love to share it with you and really talk about it, because between us, I think we come up with something really juicy.
Okay, well, let's take a break. You've been listening to Peace Talks on Life Conversations Radio with your host, Audrey Scott Williams. We have in studio today Andrew Harvey, just an amazing, amazing man for me, a teacher and wisdom carrier at this time that we all need to connect with. And I suggest that you begin by getting his most current book, The Hope. It has a lot of guidestones for how we pull all this together at a time on our planet when we need to be more than just the mystic and we need to be more than just the activist that bring together, as he says, of these two fires to create a third. I'd like to thank Tony for being on the switchboard today and keeping the show running smoothly. And Tony, I'd like to ask you to bring up In Beauty May I Walk. Let's have a song here as we take a quick pause, and then we're going to come right back into next part of our interview with Andrew Harvey as we really begin to get into this discovering your deepest heartbreak, that source of pain and suffering where somewhere underneath and in the midst of you'll find your passion.
In beauty may I walk all day long. May I walk through the seasons. May I walk. May I walk in peace. May I walk in peace. On this path, may I walk through my life. May I walk in old.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Welcome back to Peace Talks on Life Conversations Radio. This is your host, Audrey Scott Williams, and I am interviewing Andrew Harvey, novelist, poet, translator, mystical scholar, and profound spiritual teacher. I want to say, more than spiritual teacher in the sense of Andrew really calls us to action in his book, The Hope, not only calling us to action, but also calling us to step into that action, to merge all that we are, to create what needs to happen for, as he says, this third fire now of transformation to happen, not only within the human race, but around the globe for all of life.
Yes.
Welcome back, Andrew.
Thank you.
There are a couple of things I wanted to say before we get into the discussion on the deepest heartbreak. I was reading an article, and in the article there was a lot of talk about all the changes, the kinds of things that we hear over and over again, the inevitable, you know, space that we're in right now of great change and the great shaking on the planet. And the solution that was presented in this article was, you know, we've got to get a handle on this population control because that's what's throwing the whole thing out of kilter. And I'm like, what? You know, there was no presentation of the consciousness that we hold that allows us to embrace, you know, as long as I got mine, you know, I don't need to worry about this person over here, this whole lack that is just thrown at us over and over and over again. And I was thinking as I was reading it, one of the elders that I've studied with over the years used to say to me, you know, there is no lack. You know, there is absolutely no lack.
Oh, God, no.
The only lack occurs when different groups of people take and hoard, then the lack is created from the human experience, not from what Mother Earth provides, because even in that state, she continues to pour out herself to us.
Yeah.
And, you know,
there's a lack of love.
Exactly, of love and sharing. And
recognition of our essential unity with all of life.
Exactly. And so recently, and I want to go here because then I think this will lead into our conversation on deepest heartbreak. A couple of days ago, I was reading this, you know, you get these little pop-ups on your computer when the news, you know. And usually I ignore them, but in this one it caught my eye. A mother had lied on her paperwork. She lived in a poor section of Akron and wanted to give her daughters an opportunity to have access to better education. And so she lied about her residency, used her father, where he lives, to put the daughters in the school district in his area. And so then the school, 4 years later, found out that she had lied about this. Fast forward, ultimately leading to her being imprisoned.
Oh, God.
For 10 days, charged with a felon because she did this. Now, I know that, yes, she did, you know, lie about residency.
It's such a stupid reaction.
Is that not a stupid reaction? And it was a woman judge who did
this. She was desperate.
Set an example. She was desperate. And so I want to start there, Andrew, as a way of getting into your deepest heartbreak, because for me, that brought me front and center to my deepest heartbreak. Growing up in the South, you know, during the early civil rights movement, when I had to go down back alleys and go up the steps to go see movies, and you know, my brother and I, being the first black kids allowed into an all-white elementary school, and have the mothers standing in the lines with the signs and yelling things, and you're having to be escorted into the building. So when I read this story, Andrew, it brought me right into my deepest heartbreak, and I'm like, we're not getting it. Why do we have a system that is still separate but equal, separate and unequal? And why would we put this mother in prison to make an example of her for coming across the border, so to speak, and infiltrating? It just brought up so much of my heartbreak. So this is where I'd like to begin, you sharing with us. What does that mean, connecting with your deepest heartbreak as an avenue to your passion?
Well, I believe, and I think you believe, and I know you believe, Audrey, that when you discover what is your deepest heartbreak, you discover what you have the most passion to do something about. It's very, very simple. But one of the things that prevents you from discovering your passion and so your mission is your terror of opening up to the pain that you really feel. So one of the things that I do when I go out, I say to people, discover your deepest heartbreak and you will discover your deepest passion. And when you discover your deepest passion, you will hear what God wants you to give your life to. Mm-hmm. And I suggest the following practice to people. And we were talking and you were saying, what can I say to people? And I would really beg you to do this practice with people, because I've done it all over the world and I cannot tell you how moving and powerful it has become. I say to people, please, my friends, wake up at about 3 o'clock in the morning one day soon. Sit on your bed in the stillness of the night. Call upon the divine in whatever way is most natural for you, and ground yourself in the great peace and the great joy and the unconditional love of the divine. So you begin the practice by really, really grounding yourself in the great strength that that peace and love and joy can bring. And as you begin to feel the peace, as you begin to feel the love, as you begin to feel the joy, then turn with great confidence and calm that you're not going to be destroyed to the actual situation in the real world, burning to death in the fires of delusion, greed, and ignorance. And really look at all of the devastating problems that are around us. And then ask yourself one question, like a koan, but go on asking it to yourself. And the question that I beg people to ask themselves is, what of all of these causes, what of all of these problems, what of all of these devastations, what of all of these nightmares that I see exploding around me in the real world breaks my heart the most? And it is an immensely important question. And when you're peaceful and strong enough and grounded enough in God, you can really ask that question with great clarity. When you discover what that cause is, you will feel two things. You'll dare to feel the deep suffering and grief that you have around that cause. And you'll find what Rumi says is true. He says that when you find your deepest heartbreak, you find in the center of that heartbreak a fountain of deathless passion that will never run dry. And when you find your deepest heartbreak in this way, then make a pledge, a vow, before God and in God, to devote yourself to doing something with others in a network of grace to heal that suffering. I learnt this practice from a great Hindu tantric woman in Benares. She was a very holy woman, and she gave me this practice. And I did it. And I asked myself, what of all of these causes breaks my heart the most? And, as a gay man, I'm very depressed about the way in which homosexuals are still treated. I read in the paper today that in Uganda they are thinking of bringing in death penalties for homosexuality. And actually, one of the ministers in the Ugandan government said, homosexuals, you can forget about human rights. This is unbelievable that we're still dealing with this.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's madness. There are, I think, 30 countries in which the death penalty for homosexuality is still going. And, but it wasn't that really I found moved me the most. I'm deeply disturbed by women's rights and deeply disturbed by the whole questions of the environment, deeply disturbed by poverty. But what I found at the core of my greatest pain was the atrocious way we are dealing with animals. Mm. The appalling treatment of animals in our slaughterhouses, the appalling treatment of animals in vivisection, the appalling carelessness with which we destroy the habitats of animals. I don't know if you know, but it's now certain that within 10 years there'll be no lions in Africa. We're killing everything. When birds are disappearing, snow leopards are being destroyed, tigers are down to the last 3,000. This is an insane, devastating, horrific commentary on our absolute dereliction of duty, of love to the creation. And I realize that I am most appalled by that. So a lot of the work that I do is for animal rights. I work for the White Lions Protection Trust in South Africa. I'm starting a school for sacred warriorship out in South Africa in the presence of the white lions, who are considered by the African shamans to be the Dalai Lamas of the animals, carriers of a great message for the whole of humanity and all of animals, of divine love in action. Mm-hmm. And what I discovered in discovering my deepest heartbreak was a tremendous passion to stand up for animal rights wherever I go. So
yes.
When you're with people, ask them to do this practice, do it with them, and then talk about what they discover and share. Because I think what we discover when we discover our deepest heartbreak is a connection to the heartbreak of God, to the heartbreak of the Divine Mother. God is heartbroken at what we are doing and what we have become and what we are letting being done. And when you discover your deepest heartbreak, you begin to share some of the pain of the heart of God and share some of the passion that rises from that pain in the heart of God to change everything in the name of compassion and justice. This is,
absolutely,
I'm convinced, the way to go forward.
Absolutely. Andrew, in the remaining moments that we have, I want to ask a couple of questions for our audience sake, so that they have information. I personally am interested in the networks of grace, and perhaps a conversation we can have is about how we can connect that with some of the work we're doing, as we're walking across the country and finding these incredible pockets of communities that are just ready for the right tools, for the right wisdom, for the right opportunities, to make just doing wonderful things in their community. So I want to see how we might be able to connect that with, with the program, so that they then are connected with other groups, other networks of grace, around not only the country but perhaps around the world on specific.
Yes, that's a wonderful thing. I would just refer everybody to my website, networksofgrace.org, and they'll see the networks that are already established, and to my book, because Networks of Grace is the sixth of the seven laws of sacred activism, and they will see how I have set up the kinds of guidelines, and they are only guidelines, because I think every network of grace can be its own identity, for how people can organize these. It's Chapter 15 of my book, The Hope, A Guide to Sacred Activism, and it might be a valuable thing just to Xerox those three pages and give them out to people as guidelines with the web information, so they can see that this is already happening, people are already being galvanized by this, they're already being interconnected through the web by this, and it's already catching fire. I think when people realize that they're not having to be pioneers, that things are already in place, they get peace and courage to go forward.
Absolutely. And sharing best practices to me is just such a, it makes sense, you know, because
yes,
we have so much to do. Let's build on what's out there rather than thinking, as you said, we all have to be the pioneers.
No, it's here. Yeah. That's been the whole purpose of my work and the work of other people like myself. And the other thing that I would really love to say to people is that I've begun an institute of sacred activism, and that anybody who really wants to train in this new consciousness can come to the institute. I have a major initiation of a week coming up in October, and I'm trying to price this as low as possible so that anybody can come if they really want to. And in this week-long initiation, we will explore the glory of the birth that's possible. We will really give people tools as to how to do the shadow work. We will really take people through all of the different levels of spiritual practice, including the new yoga that I've created, Heart Yoga. and we will really help people really get the guidelines clear for creating networks of grace. So if people really want to train in this new consciousness, I beg them to come to the Institute of Sacred Activism. Again, they can see that on my website, andrewharvey.net, and instituteofsacredactivism.org, and that it would be very exciting if you could point the people who seem to be really sincere and really awoken and say to them, look, you are not alone. There is a roadmap. It is in place and it is already working. And here is an institute where you can go and really get what you need, the real down-home, passionate, practical tools that you need to start doing this work in your local communities and spreading the third fire like wildfire.
That's right. And Andrew, of course, I always consider us to be peace partners with the Institute for Sacred Activism.
Oh, I'm honored to be in any way connected with your wonderful work and with you. You know how much I love you, Audrey, and
yeah.
I love your work. I cannot tell you how much I'm behind it.
Well, we're going to, I'm going to really put on our website a section now, because this is really important to me, Andrew, that we've got to create these roadmaps. And I see in the work that you present here with the Networks of Grace and the work that you're doing through the book, The Hope, that's giving so much information. You're giving us a guidepost. So I'm going to create a section on our website and link it to you so that we can begin to activate these circles as we are going around, or cells as you call them, so that we can become a part of what you're doing, and in that way our communities, after we're gone, have a place that they can go and get what they need. So thank you, Andrew. I know we're really running out of time here, but I just want to say thank you so much for being on Peace Talks today. I look forward to us continuing this dialogue and continuing the work and the discovery of more and more tools and gems that we can offer our communities and ourselves as we truly do transform, as we come to this third fire.
And please send me the link to our talk so that I can get this wonderful interview that you've enabled me to give to you and your wonderful contributions to it to all of my people.
Absolutely, we'll do that. Thank you so much, Andrew.
I love you.
I love you, too. And you've been listening to Peace Talks on Life Conversations Radio. Until next Friday, have a great week. Remember, touch that deepest space in your heart and let that be the beginning of the flower that blooms into action to make a difference in your community and in the world.
God bless you, Audrey.
Thank you, Andrew.